ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Text number 33, is that correct? 11, chapter 13, canto 11, text number 33. 111333. Evang vimrishya gunato manasas pivasta.
Evang vimrishya gunato manasas pivasta.
Man mayaya mahi kvita eti nischitata. Sanchejahara manumana sadukti tikshna.
Sanchejahara manumana sadukti tikshna.
Jana sina bhajatama kila sanshayadim.
Jana sina bhajatama kila sanshayadim.
Evam. Thus. Vimrishya. Considering. Gunataha, by the modes of nature. Manasaha, of the mind. Priyavastaha, the three states of consciousness. Matmayaya, by the influence of my illusory potency. Mai, in me. Kitaha, imposed. Iti, thus. Nischita Ataha, those who have ascertained the actual meaning of the soul. Sanchidya, cutting off. Hardam, situated in the heart. Anumana, by logic. Satukti, and by the instructions of sages and the Vedic literatures. Tikshna, sharpened. Jnana, of knowledge. Asina, by the sword. Vajata, all of you worship. Ma, me. Akila, of all. Sanshaya, doubts. Adim, the cause, false ego. You should consider how, by the influence of my illusory energy, these three states of mind, caused by the modes of nature, have been artificially imagined to exist in me. Having definitely ascertained the truth of the soul, you should utilize the sharpened sword of knowledge, acquired by logical reflection and from the instructions of sages and Vedic literatures, to completely cut off the false ego, which is the breeding ground of all doubts. All of you should then worship me, who am situated within the heart. Purport. This is purport by Vidyananda Goswami on this section of the Bhagavatam. One who has obtained transcendental knowledge is no longer dependent on the three stages of ordinary consciousness, namely waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. One thus rids one's material mind of the tendency to become the enjoyer of the inferior energy of the Lord, and one sees everything as part and parcel of the Lord's potency, meant only for the enjoyment of the Lord Himself. In such a state of consciousness, one naturally surrenders fully to the Lord's devotional service, which Lord Hamsa here advises the sons of Lord Brahma to take up. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuranmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Mukham karoti vachalam bhangam langayate giram. Yatkipatam aham bande Shri Gurundina Tarinam. Yes, the fourth ego, Ahankara. Described also in Bhagavad Gita that Ahankara, the false ego, is also one of Krishna's separated inferior energies. Very interesting. Whilst the living entity is also one of Krishna's energies, where varieties of energies, prasya shakti vibhaya shuyute, that Krishna has unlimited energies, multiple energies. No acting. Accordingly, the material energy is acting, being here under the direction of the modes of nature, but believe it or not, material modes of nature are working under Krishna's direction. Mayadya kshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. And they're being directed by Krishna through his various energies and through his various expansions. The modes of nature are working based upon the individual soul's desire. It goes way back. It's not just karma. Of course, karma comes into play, but the real trigger, efficient cause, is the soul of the desire of the soul. The actual cause is the soul's desire. Just like it describes how this material world comparative to a tree. The spiritual world, we can only an example, it's not perfect in one sense, but the tree on the riverbank is standing upright, and when it is reflected on water, the tree appears to be upside down. It may even look like the tree, and sometimes you take a photograph and you do like that, if you have a good camera, and the water is very still, you can barely tell the difference between the two. You can turn the picture the other way around and wonder which is the real one. It looks real, practically speaking. But it is simply a reflection on the water. And when the water starts to ripple, the reflection becomes perverted. So in the material world is like that, the three modes of nature are like ripples, and thus the reflection is perverted, various shapes, sizes, and so on, which include the mind, which include the intellect. It's not just the world around us, the physical form, but the mind also. All these are material elements on which the living entity's consciousness is being placed. That's a word I can't think. But the living entity's consciousness is being placed in that direction. Also in this 11th canto, in the chapter, I think it's the Avanti Brahmin, perhaps later in this chapter, I don't know, maybe earlier. But there's a description in this canto, there's a description there from what, to whom should we be angry? To whom should we direct our anger? Now, some of you may have bitten your tongue. Has anyone ever bitten their tongue? Have you bitten your tongue? You have. Already you've bitten your tongue. So do you get angry with your teeth? Why not? They bit the tongue and made you suffer. Those wretched teeth. They should be punished. Right? We should tear the teeth out. What is then no more biting? Good idea. What do you think? Yes? So generally we may be angry, but we don't know to whom to be angry. You can't really get angry with your teeth. Or perhaps there was an effort to bite on something and you missed it and bit your tongue instead. You can't get angry on the item in your mouth or about the tongue for being in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever it may be. It's meaningless to become angry like this. So, because, well, let's see if we can look into that. So, in the simile in the mature world, it's described that to whom do we get angry? The material body is not us. The mind is also not us. It's only like a reflection of the material energies that we come in contact with, combined to form various attachments and aversions. The intellect is directed towards the material world, basically under the direction. Time is simply acting according to the will of the Lord, of course. The Lord is, the material energy is under Krishna's direction, and Krishna is reciprocating, yea, what's that verse? Yeah, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. What's that verse? Yayatamam prapajate tamstatai papajamyaham. That everyone's following Krishna's path, mamavartmanavartante. Everyone's following Krishna's path, but that path is arranged by Krishna through the agencies of his material nature according to our desire. It's not like the path is there and you kind of pot luck which one you choose. This, according to the desire of the living entity, the Lord has arranged this material world to facilitate the living entity's desires. So it's described that the material energy is actually the material world, as a reflection of a tree, is resting on the water. Similarly, the material world is resting on the desire of the living entity. And when that desire changes, there's no more material world. At least not for that soul. For others, they still, what we call the material world, experience that and relate to that. The false ego is basically our identification. When we no longer identify ourselves as the body, the mind, the intellect, the objects of the senses around us, when we no longer identify with them as being mine or me, then one is free. That's the false, of course, there's another aspect of the false ego, but at least in terms of the material world, one is free. So the idea is to change not the world. Sometimes we want to change the world, we want to change our mind, we want to change our intelligence. Okay, that's inevitable. Is going on always in this world. We try to change it in relation with Krishna, but the real thing which has to be changed, the whole purpose of it all, is the false ego. We often see that devotees, they immediately change, say for instance, the sense objects. They start to change the types of sense objects that they're associated with, or then they start to use them in a different direction, the senses. So the senses then start to use the sense objects differently. Instead of, smoking cigarettes and drinking liquor and things like that, you start, changing what type of sense contact one has with the world around us. And then the mind, one may try to may engage the senses, then you engage the mind. It's basically the same. It depends what we understand by mind. Sometimes we think the mind is all the things that we're seeing in front of it, but the mind is basically like a television set or something, and many different programs could come on it. The program itself, although we may say is the television, or the thoughts in our mind, we say are our mind. The mind in one sense is a kind of a neutral in the sense. It depends on the association, what will be the contents of our mind. The mind is a potential facility for thinking, feeling, willing. And everyone has the same basic facilities. It's what we do, of course, which influences the varieties of pictures which we see on the mental platform. And same thing with the intellect. So these things are being maybe engaged. We're a little intelligent. We engage the mind and the senses in Krishna's service. And then maybe our intelligence is also scanning how to understand things, how to preach, and so on and so forth, how to control the senses, scanning all the various opportunities and alternatives. But still, sometimes we see, even then, the living entity is already engaged fully in service, the mind, trying to engage the mind in thinking and remembering Krishna, or some way spreading Krishna consciousness, the intelligence, trying to discriminate what is favorable and unfavorable and so on. These things are going on, in relationship with Krishna to a large degree, but then still sometimes one advances very much in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes then even still one falls down. It's quite an extraordinary thing, you could say, but it's this false ego, that we still see ourselves separately from Krishna. We still see ourselves as the doer. We still identify ourselves with the things which are going on around us, and thinking ourselves as the doer and the enjoyer, or the, you know, the cause of our success and failure and so on and so forth. Of course, well, in one sense, the soul is one of the causes, primarily the primary cause in one sense. But when we see it in terms of, you know, say, separately from Krishna, then this is the false ego. So at that stage, when we're not willing to give up our independence, this is the real crux of the matter, is our independence. Whether we're dependent upon Krishna or dependent upon Krishna's energies, which we think are ourselves in the form of the mind, the body, the intellect, and so on, logic and reason, and so many other things. So when we start to realize all these facilities, everything we have, our mind even, although of course the reflection of it, that's another thing, but the facility itself, and the intellect, and everything else, is actually the mercy of Krishna. What we do with it, that's another thing. But the facility is the mercy of Krishna. So the real point is not to change the facility of Krishna, but to change how we see it. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj would, sometimes he would speak on these subject matters of, you know, one who thinks, for instance, isn't it, quote, one who thinks himself to be a reformer of this world is in need of reform. No one can change this world at all. Not by the breadth of one hair. Everything is controlled and organized by a power way beyond us. We're like a passenger. We think we're in control. Or we're like someone watching the TV and we think, yeah. And we do identify with it. And you go crazy sometimes watching the television. You become elated, you become depressed, you become angry, you become lusty. You get all these emotions, you know, all it is you're watching pictures on a glass in a box, and we kill people over it sometimes. This is the material world. It's like a television program which we're watching, but we're identifying with it, and we're going completely controlled, pretty much controlled by it. So the idea is not that we battle away trying to control it. Of course, there's a certain element of regulation there, but that also is not our own speculation. That is the direction of Krishna. We listen to Krishna. We take shelter of Krishna. Daivihi Shivanamai, Mama Maya Darachaya, Amevaye Prabhajante Mayamitam Talantite. This material energy is impossible to overcome. Not possible. Those who take shelter of me can easily cross beyond it, because Krishna personally delivers the soul who turns to him. The false ego is just like which way you look, which way the soul is looking. You're looking to Krishna for shelter, or you're looking to the material world. This is our choice. Or in the beginning, it's simply looking away from Krishna, because we don't have a material world. We're not in a position. The soul can't create anything, really, simply willing, desiring, and so on. But Krishna provides the facilities of this material world according to the desire of the soul to according to the will of the soul to enjoy separately from Krishna. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj goes on that the only reform which is actually required is a reform of our own perception of how we see things, and that is a vote that change takes place when we expose ourselves to the transcendental sound vibration of the holy name. This is the, particularly in this age of Kali, is the primary way of changing that false ego. We use the mind and the senses and the intellect and so on, objects of the senses in the form of musical instruments and other things, in order to facilitate that purpose. And it really rests upon our exposing ourselves, not just our mind and our senses, that's a good start, but actually the self. When there's no false ego between the self and the holy name or Krishna, this is real exposure. Real exposure. The more that we expose, just like you take, for instance, a camera. Some of you have cameras. Now I think it's all digitals. But maybe somebody still has one of those old-fashioned cameras which has a film inside of it. You have those still? Anyone has one? Camera, you have a camera with a film. They're usually better quality, actually, if you're really serious about photography. So the film, reel, the film, the spool, whatever it's called, it's interesting because it takes pictures of exactly what you open, expose yourself to, basically. Exposure. So, of course, you could say the senses are like the lens through which pictures are taken and sort of reflected in the mind, and then, you know, you decide what to do with those things, and naturally we identify. When you take that picture, I'm sure you've all got pictures of your babies, those who are mums and dads. It's a very popular object of photography are little babies and little children, and you keep those to the day you die. And you meditate on it, and you be very, very attached. Even the woolen gloves that your babies wear, and the woolen socks, and that little bunny hat, and whatever it is like worshipable, practically speaking. Even though your son or daughter is 60 years old. We look back, and we become very, very attached to these pictures, long gone. But we become really attached to it, you know, emotionally attached and so on. And that's how it works in the material world. We take all these pictures, we dote over it, and we become very entangled and attached, contemplating the objects of the senses all the time. But that film, generally speaking, whatever you expose through the lens, we've got many senses, not just the eye, many senses, whatever we absorb through those senses is the kind of, you can say, the cumulative picture of our mind, and even the desires that which we experience in the mind, once we're in this material world, are basically a compilation or a complex combination of all these various associations and attachments to those associations which we have lifetime after lifetime, formulate our nature, our attitude, our desires, our tendencies, and so on. And they're there when we come into this lifetime, into this very life, one already has this whole kind of like way you see the world. It's from the previous lives. Everyone has a particular perception of the same thing. The thing is the same. One person sees it one way, one sees another, because we have a different type of perception or a different type of conception also of the world around us. Different sort of filter, you can maybe say, filter through our senses and mind by which we perceive the world as attractive or repulsive and so on. So Raghadveshi Mukta, India, we have to become free from Raghadvesha, attachment and aversion. And the primary way is becoming attached to Krishna. So if you see, when you take that film, if you have the negative film, that when that negative film, although it is many photographs may be stored there in the reel, but when you expose that film to the... How do you develop it? How do you develop a film? Some of you may not know this because you may not have seen this type of photography. How do you develop a film? Pardon? Put it in some liquid, some chemicals, and in what environment? A dark room. So under certain situations, contact with chemicals, etc., in a dark room, that negative then becomes a positive. Is it not? And then you have that lovely picture. Imagine if you took 100 pictures of your darling little baby, and there's nothing. When you see the film, there's nothing on it. How disappointed you would be. Is it not? You know, especially if it was some special occasion, you know, the first birthday party or something, and there was nothing there. How disappointing. But when the pictures come out, how happy you are. Oh, look at this one. Oh, look at that one. Look at this one. Oh, that one, this one, that one. We're all over the place, becoming very attached. No, in the material world, it's like the dark room. The dark room is there. I don't know, comparison with the chemicals, maybe the modes of nature or something or another. The karma. They become developed. And then we have this ongoing, seemingly never-ending thoughts and desires and attachments, right back to the false ego that identifies us with all those things. You've got all these things because you turn away from Krishna and contacted the material world, and the false ego continues to absolutely identify with it. So one becomes completely, basically, just a passenger in the hands of the material energy being guided around in this material world from one birth to the next. Now, if we develop that film in the sunlight, what happens? You've got the chemicals are there. You've got the chemicals. Okay, let's say the chemicals are the various senses in the body and this and that. You've got all that, but if you develop the film in the sunlight, what happens? Pardon? You want that to speak a little louder. I'm sorry, I'm half deaf. What is that? It's overexposed. And what happens when it's overexposed? Excuse me? Washing? What does that mean? Excuse me? What will you see? Nothing? You'll see a blank, huh? You'll see nothing. Well, you'll see something, but not exactly nothing. But you'll see the negative is blank. Is it? You see it, but there's a blank. It's a blank. It's not nothing there. And in a sense, this is what's really the situation. But in the dark, we're seeing the reflection, and we're thinking this is the reality. So when we expose, let's say, the pictures in our mind, everything like that, in the presence of Krishna, when we utilize, when we dovetail, everything, whatever it is, whatever we picked up, all those photographs, all those attachments, all those identifications, whatever it may be, the more we expose them to Krishna, what will happen? Krishna Surasam Maya Haya Andakar. What will happen? Ignorance will go away. The removal of ignorance is not a mechanical process of logical adjustment or mental, you know, speculation or anything like that, or even by our mechanical efforts to do it. It really is a matter of our association with Krishna. Now that's on every level, on the sensual platform, mental platform, intellectual platform, but finally the egotistical platform, when we actually surrender to Krishna. Not just surrender things to Krishna. It's quite easy to surrender things to Krishna. It's harder to surrender the mind and the intellect, but actually surrendering our very self to Krishna, a surrendered soul. That process is a little more difficult. So unless we come to that platform of being actual surrendered soul, there is a risk that we may fall down. You can take an example. Kind of an example. When Bali Maharaj was, of course, he's a special person, but in principle and practice, he was like conquering the universe. Now I'm the king of the universe. I'm the greatest. He conquered the heavenly planets. Everything was more or less under his control. Not the highest planets, not Brahmaloka or some of those topmost planets, but up to the heavenly planets, which are below those planets. He conquered pretty much everything. Even the demigods were either at his beck and call or they were in hiding. So he was the most powerful person of the time. And then, of course, when Lord Vamadeva, by the request of the demigods, took away all of Bali Maharaj's property. And then Bali Maharaj surrendered himself, his head. Himself or his head? He surrendered his body. Please place your foot on my body. And so Vamanadeva did. So everybody, of course, this is a very great and noble act. He's famous as one who surrenders everything to Krishna, Atmanivedanam. So after that pastime, that he'd taken everything, all the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems were taken aback, And then he had nowhere, two steps, third step, placed on my head. I sacrifice my body and my head to you, maybe mind also maybe, but whatever is there. So then he was thinking, now I've fulfilled my promise that I would give three steps of land. And he was thinking like that. Vindhyavali, his wife, came on the scene and she started to chastise her husband. You can quite imagine it, ladies, if your husband, one day you come home, perhaps you've been for a walk, and you come home and you see everything has been given away to some funny fellow and absolutely nothing is left for you. All your shoes, your saris, your everything, your kitchen utensils, your cinder, everything has been given away. There's not a single thing left. Not one thing. The bank account, the mobile, everything has been given away. And maybe you also have been given away, I don't know. But anyway, everything else has been given away and there's absolutely nothing left. How would you feel? You would certainly be angry or chastise your husband. He never even consulted you. Can you imagine? At least he should have consulted you. I mean, he could at least ask me first, what is this? I'm supposed to be your better half. You never even asked me. You rascal. You can imagine how you'd feel. So she said, she chastised her husband quite strongly. She called him an agnostic fool. You agnostic fool, she said. No, still you have not realized. Now you think that you're giving something, that you have sacrificed everything for this boy, whoever he may be. But you are still the same fool that you were before. Because you are thinking that you have given it, that you have sacrificed it, but it was never yours to sacrifice. It was never yours to give. This is your ignorance. You are thinking you are doing this, now you've done it. Well done. But this is another form of ignorance. It belonged to that boy in the very beginning. But you are thinking, now I've given it to him. You're still in ignorance, she said. So Prabhupada describes that Vindhyavali was much more advanced than Bali Maharaj in spiritual realization. Although he'd given everything inconceivable practically, something we could hardly do, but he did that, but still Vindhyavali said, you're still in illusion. Because how can you give something if it doesn't belong to you? And then you become proud of giving that person. It already belonged to that person. It was his in the beginning. And now you're proud of the understanding that you've given it to him. This is the false ego. That we think that we're doing this and that. But actually it's all the grace of Krishna. And the real thing is to recognize that everything is the grace of Krishna. No matter what situation we're in. And whatever it may be, we take responsibility. We're not angry at anyone for our situation. Try to understand that as long as we're angry at anyone else, we remain in this material world ad infinitum. Even if they did shoot us with a gun, even if they did something bad to us, we're responsible for it at the background. Of course, there's social laws and things which have to go into place, no doubt. But in reality, we're responsible. We're just getting what is required and what we deserve to help us to come to our senses. And until we realize that, there isn't really much hope of spiritual advancement, really. We're just tombing, we're just digging our own bodies or graves, whichever way you like it, in this material world. I've got to get my own back on this person and that thing, and I've got to adjust this, I've got to make that happen, etc. And eventually, of course, we blame God if things don't go well. So this is the material world. And practically everyone, even devotees, are still oftentimes, you know, in this mood, blaming ISKCON, blaming the guru, blaming the temple president, blaming something or another, blaming their wives, blaming their husbands, blaming the government, blaming Maya, blaming Kali, blaming the three modes of nature, blaming anything and everything, and ultimately blaming Krishna. Oh yes, it happens a lot. So many things. Blaming Prabhupada sometimes also. But we don't care to blame ourselves. That's the last resort. Last resort. And it has to be done properly too. Not that we just simply become mad and crazy and angry with ourselves. But no, it means taking responsibility for our situation and doing the needful to try to adjust it by actually cultivating the process of submission and submissive, placing ourselves submissive to Krishna's response and not challenging. Submissively, our senses, mind, everything, placing them in the association of the holy name or the instructions of the spiritual master or Shastra at our stage, and ultimately, of course, to the pure devotees who know how to please Krishna, and basically just allowing oneself to be that nimitta matra bhavisava sachina, instrument for the will of Krishna, learning and living how to please Krishna's will, and not just our own idea of what is Krishna's will, how we feel, because that always is a reflection, it's always according to our conditional situation, I think this is what Krishna wants, etc. No, it's not, I mean, there's something there, it's better than nothing, but the real thing is when we actually take shelter, what is actually Krishna's will, we hear that from Guru Shastra and Sadhu, not from our mind, not even from our intellect. They may be in court, say, in sync with that or in line with that, but we don't depend on it. Shastra is there to guide us so that we can come out of this illusion. Out of this illusion. It's a form of Krishna. Form of Krishna. So we can start seeing the material world as Krishna's energy, and from our point of view at the present moment, to be used in Krishna's service as and until we are, self-realized, and we'll still continue to use it in his service, but it's no longer material. See, it is spiritual. So we'll finish there. Are there any questions or comments? I can't stretch my head around. Is there any? I can see a vague reflection over there. There's any hands going up anywhere? Please let me know. Don't all ask at once. There is a hand there, Rob.
You mentioned that we can't perform anything in this world because there's a higher power controlling everything. How does this contribute to that picture?
It's following that higher power. It's an instrument of that higher power. It's not us. ISKCON, then again, is the same thing, mixtures. What we understand is if we mix in illusion, then of course you get a reflection which may not be pure. So ISKCON is supposed to be a reflection. Prabhupada's instruction is a reality, but it's like a reflection of the spiritual world. That's the idea. And of course it's according to our own condition, we'll see it differently. We'll see it as sometimes quite the opposite, because we have the opposite vision. Our vision is very much self-centered. Then we'll see ISKCON in relationship to ourselves and not in relationship with Krishna. But it's actually, Prabhupada is giving us the spiritual world. But of course we're still seeing it as material because we're conditioned. So it's not in that sense, in of itself, anything separate than Krishna's association. And by that association, which includes the everything really, the paraphernalia, the instructions, the association and everything else, process, is association with Krishna. ISKCON is supposed to be. There may be many other ways that Krishna is also giving his association, of course, but ISKCON is particularly, we're supposed to make it like that. We do have a little responsibility, you could say. We're not going to be completely neutral in that sense. We have our free will. But we have to use our free will intelligently to apply our free will in relationship with Prabhupada's instruction. And you can't expect immediately you'll see the spiritual world. But the process of ISKCON is to bring the conditioned soul from the conditioned state where we see things pervertedly to the pure state of seeing everything in relationship with Krishna and seeing other living entities who are coming to the lotus feet of Prabhupada, in a conditioned way. Obviously, they're not going to act perfectly and they may behave strange ways, but how we can help them to also come to see things in relationship with Krishna. So this is the idea of ISKCON. Primarily, the purpose of ISKCON is to facilitate the most potent and effective means of associating with Krishna, to facilitate the chanting of the holy names. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll talk more on the process of chanting the holy names of Krishna if we're still here. This is the primary way to associate with Krishna. That's the main function of this movement. So we in our conditioned state we can try to make conditional situate arrangements to facilitate the transcendental sound vibrations presence by adjusting things in one sense, you could say, to facilitate the holy names more and more and more. More chanting and so on, more hearing about Krishna. So as the tree is reflected on water, when there's no more water, there is no more reflection. The tree is there, ground is there, everything else, sun is there, but no water, no reflection. Maybe a shadow, but not a reflection in the water. There's different types of reflections. We're just using the one, the water. So, and the shadow is very darker, more ignorance. So similarly, when there's no more material desire, there's no more reflection. There's no more material world. There's a question of our desire changing. ISKCON, purpose of this ISKCON is to change our desire also, but not that we're changing exactly, but we're choosing to expose ourselves to the process by which our desires will change. And that's what ISKCON's supposed to be for, to provide that facility where we can expose ourselves to it, and thus our desires will change by the grace of Krishna. Yes. Krishna is what?
Krishna is unattached.
Is not attached. Unattached. Yeah, that's one angle. Krishna is neutral. He leaves that free will up to us. He's not going to force us. But still the same. He's the father of all living entities. So he is attached to his children in another sense. We're part and parcel of Krishna. So he wants us to go back to Godhead. Yeah, although he's neutral in one sense, he's absorbed the countless forms of the Lord and his countless pastimes. So he's unattached to this material world in one sense, but his heart of compassion is attached and concerned for the living entities in this material world or in the conditioned state. He wants to bring them back to their senses, or let's say to their pure consciousness. So he's not unattached in that sense. In one sense he is, in another sense he isn't. Like maybe sometimes when you're in a leadership position, in one sense you're unattached, you have to be, otherwise you'll be dragged left, right and center. But at the same time, one is always thinking in terms of how to act beneficially for everybody under your shelter or protection. So the Lord is always thinking like that too. But it's not like this is the transcendental nature of the Supreme Being, although he's totally absorbed in his transcendental activities, aloof from this material world. And when he expands himself in the form of Lord Vishnu and so on and so forth, you can say they're unattached. That form of the Lord is just basically facilitating the various desires of the living entity according to their will. But the pure devotees of the Lord, who are understanding the real heart of the Lord, they make it their business to try to wake people up, to try to wake others up. Because they know that will bring pleasure to Krishna. He doesn't want them to bother with all of that because it's a botheration for his pure devotees. But they want to do it because it will bring more pleasure to Krishna. So they take those risks and come into this world to preach against the grain almost, or conditioned souls under the modes of nature behave strangely, very strangely sometimes, aggressively even. They're in ignorance and passion. But the devotee doesn't mind. He's not worried the least. And similarly, the devotee, in one sense, he's unattached. Same thing, really. In one sense, he's unattached. In other words, he's not dependent upon it. That's the free will of the conditioned soul. He's not dependent upon them surrendering or not surrendering. But in his heart, he is very much attached to the idea that somehow or another may they be delivered. May they be delivered. His devotion doesn't waver according to the result. He's not attached to the result as such, in one sense, but in another sense he is, because he wants them to be delivered. And he's willing to sacrifice his very life for the deliverance of others, for the saving of others. Anything else? Yes.
The act of pure devotional service to Krishna doesn't mean that he is not detached.
Excuse me?
When
there's a lot of noise out there at the door. Something about pure devotional service I heard.
When we offer pure devotional service
when we offer pure devotional service.
Yeah.
Does that mean we are?
Does that mean that he is detached?
Yes. It's that we're attached to Krishna. One is automatically considered to be detached from the material energies. There are two ways of detachment. One is to, mechanical. Many people endeavor for the mechanical detachment. That's very difficult. It's not impossible, it's very difficult. And the other is to become attached to Krishna automatically. Nibandha Krishna Sambhana Yukta Varagamishite. The devotee is even, it's not even then that you become detached from it in the sense of, you run away from your family or you give up your job and all this and that. No, it's not like that either. But one sees everything in relationship with Krishna, like you become like Vindhyavali, not like Bali so much who just gave it all away. But one who sees it as all belonging to Krishna and should be used for his pleasure, that's all. So that's real detachment. You're attached to doing your service and ashita karma palam karyam karma karotiya sasanyasi chiyogi cha nanaragnina chakriyaha. One has to be perform one's duty, perform one's activity without attachment to the result. The result is for Krishna's pleasure. But you're attached to doing your service nicely for Krishna, but not to depending upon the result, so to speak, for yourself. But we want to see a nice result for Krishna's pleasure. In the beginning it will be a bit false egotistical, we're competitive or whatever it may be, there's lust and all sorts of things come in the beginning. Mixed understanding. But if we do advance, then it will become less and less a mix and more pure. They say when you're really engaged in pure devotional service, our devotion is mixed at the moment. But we're following a pure devotee, so if we continue to apply the instructions of the pure devotee in our lives, then step by step we hope that our devotion will become purer. And instead of for me, but rather for Krishna. More and more and more. And automatically then one is disinterested in material sense gratification, not attached or dependent on this material world, not fearful, not an anxiety over material success or failure, etc. Freed of those things. And there's one last question over here.
You mentioned that you should be depending on Krishna, not on the energies of Krishna. So depend on the energies of Krishna instead of the false ego. But in the mind and intelligence, we have to depend on them to know Krishna. So how do we distinguish?
Well, we don't depend upon them. We need them. But there's no, in one sense you can say we're depending upon the body and mind in order to render service to Krishna. But the key is rendering service to Krishna. The mind and body are not the key. They're instruments. They're instruments which you use, which come and go. So the real key is depending on our service to Krishna. So we have to depend upon that. And then we use everything else for Krishna. The mind and body will not come up with this. The real key is depending on Krishna. And that means taking direction how to use the mind and body in Krishna's service. And to see it as Krishna's, not mine. You're responsible for it. It's like you're leasing a house or something. It's not ours, but we're responsible for it. It belongs to someone else. So when we see it like that, the more we can see it in the beginning, it's maybe mechanical. We're just kind of being told, do this with it or do that with it. Or the scriptures say, do this with it and do that with it. This is a good start. But the pure devotee is automatically guided by the Supreme Lord. And he doesn't consider this body as himself or the mind It's something you're watching. You can practice that also. You can actually laugh at your mind and see this amazing television program going on in my mind today. But I think I'll turn the program over to another program. Or at least you can endeavor to. You can call out to Krishna, can we watch the other program? So certainly we need it. We need the mind and body in order to, in this world, spiritual with a spiritual mind and body. We do need it in order to relate, relationship with Krishna. Mayavadis think they don't, but the Vaishnavas know that we do have a spiritual form and we do have a relationship. So obviously in any kind of relationship there's some kind of communication through some form or another. So in this world we do have this, but it's temporary. It's temporary. The body and mind in this world is temporary in its form. So we use those temporary things according to the direction of Krishna, not according to the direction of the mind. Or the body's mind and body demands, but according to Krishna's will. In the beginning, it'll be about a bit of this and a bit of that, all sorts of stuff going on. That's Krishna conscious. You utilize everything in Krishna's service, but you understand it's Krishna's already. The change is to learn to recognize that and to how to do that in such a way that we'll realize it. Recognition, and then application and realization. Jnana, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains in the fourth chapter how one who dedicates himself to this knowledge attains that knowledge in course of time. You have to learn to apply these things which belong to Krishna in Krishna's service. Dovetail. We're not depending if those things are taken away. That doesn't mean that that's the end of it. It's not the end of it. Devotional service is not dependent upon those things. Because the mind is always there, in the sense it's the thinking of the soul, thinking, feeling, and willing, which platform. But certainly the body is. You can be without a body and still be Krishna conscious. Even here, we're seeing in the three states of consciousness, even in deep sleep, you're not even aware of the mind. So the soul's still there. Okay, we'll finish there. Gantraj Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna. Sunday feast program today, right? Saturday feast. Thank you all for coming. It's nice to see a big crowd of devotees here this morning, and not too many of you were sleeping. Some may have been in deep, deep sleep, I don't know. Some were dreaming. Some were partially conscious, some were more conscious, no doubt. But thank you for coming anyway. Hare Krishna.